RVs.
Oh yes. Oh, and this is great too.
This is the one I'm taking home, right? All right. And Juliet, we'd be remiss.
Juliet, our intern from USF, did her job, got here on time.
USF,
you know, yes.
And we
got
to check out all the villages, the Tech Village, the Arthur Village, and iHeart. We have the Heart Village out there.
And tons of things going on here. And again, thank you to AAA Insurance, Fox 13, Hillsborough County, the City of Tampa, and Visit Tampa Bay for being out for being the sponsors and supporters. You've been listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. Thank you so much again for tuning in on today's show. Next week, we got a great show squared up for you. And so,
gates open at 12 o'clock today down here at Curtis Hickson Park. Come on down. Contemporary jazz artist Rick Braun and Richard Elliott will be headlining today, but there'll be a ton of other acts before them.
Mm-hmm. WMNF 88.5 Tampa. Nobody
does it better. Live from NPR News in Washington. President Trump is offering to reverse course on some of his immigration policies in exchange for funding for a border wall to end the partial government shutdown. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he'll bring it to the floor for a vote this week. But as NPR's Aisha Roscoe reports, it's already facing opposition.
After weeks of a political stalemate, President Trump said he would back a three-year extension of the Obama-era DACA program, a program he's tried to end. Trump says he will also allow immigrants with temporary protected status to remain in the country for three more years. These extensions will be tied to $5.7 billion in funding for a wall on the southern border. Trump argues his proposal should be able to get support from Republicans and Democrats. But top Democrats in Congress have already come out against the plan. They say Trump must first agree to end the shutdown before any negotiations over border security can begin. Aisha Roscoe, NPR News, the White House.
The southeastern U.S. is in for powerful winds today. They follow severe storms that have brought heavy rain. And as Troy Public Radio's Kyle Gassett reports, a central Alabama town is devastated after a possible tornado.
Before the weekend, two historic churches stood near the foot of a bridge in Wetumpka, Alabama. After a possible tornado ravaged the area, only one church is left standing with considerable damage. Jerry Willis is the town's mayor, who says he's grateful for the support they've received from neighboring communities.
We couldn't do it without them. But to know that we've got mayors in other cities praying for us today, and that means a lot to us.
The National Weather Service in Birmingham says it will conduct a survey of the area to see if the storm can be classified as a tornado and what rating it should be given. For NPR News, I'm Kyle Gassett in Wetumpka, Alabama.
Officials at Kentucky's Covington Catholic High School are apologizing after video showed students there taunting Native American drummers at a rally in Washington, D.C. Friday. The school is vowing to investigate. The students were on a field trip for the anti-abortion march. Police in Northern Ireland have arrested two suspects linked to a car bombing in Londonderry last night. It exploded outside a courthouse. The BBC's Declan Harvey reports the device exploded as police were evacuating the area.
At around 5 to 8 last night, officers on patrol in Bishop Street spotted a suspicious vehicle. Police were in the process of making checks when a warning was received that a device had been left in the area. Hundreds of people were being moved when the bomb went off 15 minutes later.
This is NPR. The Democratic Republic of Congo's Constitutional Court is confirming the presidential victory of Felix Tshisekedi. But opposition candidate Martin Fayulu rejects the ruling, and the African Union is expressing doubts about the election's integrity. But South Africa's president today congratulated Tshisekedi. It's the final day in the NFL playoffs. The New Orleans Saints host the Los Angeles Rams for the NFC Championship. The New England Patriots take on the Kansas City Chiefs for the AFC title. NPR's Tom Goldman has a preview.
Both games are rematches from the regular season. The Saints beat the Rams 45-35. The Patriots beat the Chiefs 43-40. That's a ton of points, but this being the playoffs means defense should play a bigger role. A stingy New Orleans run defense will try to slow a Rams rushing attack that not only features All-Pro Todd Gurley, but C.J. Anderson, who's played in two Super Bowls. The Rams signed him last month, and he's had three straight games of 100-plus yards. Kansas City against New England matches two great quarterbacks, the Chiefs' 23-year-old MVP favorite Patrick Mahomes and 41-year-old Hall of Famer-to-be Tom Brady in a rare underdog role. The Chiefs are slight favorites over the Patriots. Tom Goldman, NPR News.
37-year-old tennis champ Roger Federer is out of the Australian Open. He lost today's quarterfinal to 14th seed and 20-year-old Stefanos Tsitsipas of Greece. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to build a culture of health that ensures everyone in America has a fair and just opportunity for health and well-being. More at rwjf.org.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, WMNF family, WMNF Tampa. This is Kyle Wright, and we are starting again. No, we don't want that. We don't want that. Yes, you know, actually, you know, a lot of folks really like our opening music, but did need to hear that twice. Okay. Yes, this is January the 20th. Again, this is Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate. You are listening to the Sunday Forum. And, you know, we have an awesome, awesome, awesome show lined up for you today. And as we posted on Facebook, not posted on Facebook, which is what I was about to say, you saw that we were focused on bringing you Martin Luther King unsanitized. All right, so a comprehensive view of Martin Luther King, okay? So our theme for today is going to be Martin Luther King unwhitewashed, right? Unwhitewashed. So here on January 20th, 2019, that's what we are going to focus on today. And we're going to bring you a lot of different perspectives and probably some clips or some facts that you were unaware of with regard to Martin Luther King. Some of you may be MLK aficionados and seen all this, but But I'm sure, because there were things that even I was learning as I was going through getting ready that are just awesome. But let's say hello to the Fourth Estate. Alvaro, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm very well, very well. Lo, how are you doing?
Wonderful. Good morning. Happy Sunday.
Thank you. You're just checking Facebook. Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
Good, good. Hey, Facebook, sorry about last week with the overmodulation, but you should be good. We should be good. We're going to take care of you. We're going to look for your comments, too. We appreciate you guys letting us know. Now, to reach us here at the Sunday Forum, our number is 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. So as we get going, talking about our current events, talking about things with Dr. Martin Luther King, then, you know, feel free to call us and comment or ask questions, etc. And again, Facebook Live, great to see you guys. I see the comments coming already, so that is good. Looks like we're tracking, because last time, that's how I knew that something was off. I was like, hey, I don't see any comments, and there are always folks commenting. So great to see you guys. And as far as our announcements, of course, we have the Toba Breakfast, which will now be tomorrow at 0645 at Tampa Hilton downtown. And of course, it's their Martin Luther King Breakfast. So we wanted to make you all aware of that. So current events, we're going to get to those pretty quickly because, you know, I have learned from experience, and Lo, you can, I mean, I know you're always laughing at this, but I have a list of things that I so-called call myself I'm going to get through, and then like a third or a fourth of them later, it's like, oh, we're going to need a part two.
Yeah.
And I already see that that's going to be the case when it comes to this, because there is so much to talk about. But, you know, I'm going to skip over some things if necessary to make sure I get to some of the key clips. But first, let's start off with some current events. As always, current events. So, first of all, government shutdown, right? Still going on, 29th day. Mm-hmm. No end in sight. And, you know, the longest in history again, which it also was last week, you know, the deal proposal, you know, everyone's angry about it. No one's happy that 45 came up with last week. But what I wanted to talk about was this little interesting exchange about the State of the Union versus the CODA, right? So Nancy Pelosi states that, well, you know, given the shutdown, you know, your security is not going to be able to handle State of the Union, right? So she's going that route. And then 45 comes back with, okay, well, your CODEL, which actually is short for Congressional Delegation, your CODEL is canceled, where she was going to go to Afghanistan and I think Egypt, and there was some place else she was going to go. Also, I think to Brussels to speak to our NATO allies. But, you know, so then he canceled that. So that was hilarious. You know, the buses going all around and people trying to figure out, are we going or not? He yanked it at the last minute. I mean, and Lindsey Graham was like, okay, you both are being sophomoric and petty, okay, which is, you know, true. But it was also hilarious. But here's the thing about these CODELs. You know, because I saw some reports of people, and I also heard when Nancy Pelosi said, you know, you're precluding my ability to go talk to the troops. We don't like CODELs. We don't want you there. We are not interested, okay, at the troop level. And even the battalion commanders, the brigade commanders, that level command, they're not talking to the congressional representative. And, you know, you have to do all this preparation for them coming. You're deployed. You're busy, okay? And here they come. And it's usually, it's a boondoggle, right? It's what we call a boondoggle, right, in the government when it comes to certain trips. And it's just like they're not necessary. And, I mean, obviously, some of the higher level command, maybe, you know, kind of combatant level or even theater command, may want to speak to Congress, right? Because, you know, Congress has the power of the purse and our military is controlled by our civilians. So understood, okay? But when it comes to these CODELs, they're not talking to the people on the ground. Again, the battalion, the brigade level commander. So, I mean, it's a boondoggle. And they can talk about, you know, they took some pictures with the troops and blah, 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 blah. And so, no, it was not at all in any way, shape, or form, you know, some horrible, you know, thing that it didn't take place. Because I know from our perspective at the troop level, then we were not interested in these CODELs. So, no, Nancy, you know, tell that to people who may maybe not have been in that position that you're talking about, but the rest of us are not buying it. So know about the I have on my notes, we don't GAF about CODELs. We don't care about CODELs. And I also wanted to, moving on to another topic. You just got that. Moving on to another topic, the firing of the black coaches that we spoke about. last week to tell you to save the date, February 9th, still February 9th, 2019, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., we are going to be discussing racism and sports, okay? The Sunday Forum is putting on a discussion on racism and sports. More details to come, promo coming, et cetera. It's in about 3 weeks, obviously. But we have some great irons in the fire as far as getting some players in. But we already have committed Professor Janelle Wells. She's at USF. Mm-hmm. In the sports. Oh, here we go. The sports management master's program. And we also have Javon Liu, who is an assistant coach for the women's basketball team at HCC. We also have Tiffany Green, an ESPN commentator and analyst. So, you know, bring them out. Oh, Lord. So I am totally excited about this. It's going to be awesome. And again, got some good connects on hopefully getting some players in. Hopefully Kenny Stills reached out to his publicist who said that he would be interested. So I just hope he has the time to come down, or some of the Bucks players. We're still working with their people too. So stay tuned, more to come, but already put it on your calendar, February 9th, 2019, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Sunday Forum. Going to bring it when it comes to racism in sports. So wanted to tell you all about that. All right, so back to what's been going on. So I'm gonna briefly touch on this bit. So Nathan Phillips is a veteran who was at the Indigenous People's March, right? And he was, you know, performing a ceremony, and nearby was the March for Life. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of young people from the March for Life came over to harass this man. Okay, no other reason. And I'm sure you all have seen the viral video of this one student standing in his face. First of all, as a black child, okay, and we'll, you know, and I know, Lord, you're going to get into perhaps, you know, that spec that was there, but there is no way I would have been raised to be in the face of some elder performing a ceremony like this kid was. Okay, and I saw on Twitter people like, oh, you know, we shouldn't, you know, malign these kids because they're just kids, whatever. No, okay, totally inappropriate, totally unnecessary, totally ridiculous. They're yelling, they're mocking him. He's not doing anything, right? He's going through his, you know, mm-hmm. you know, performing his ceremony, and they are being extremely inappropriate, racist. Okay? Ridiculous. Ridiculous. And of course, it went viral. I know there have been a lot of calls to the school, et cetera, to get these people expelled. I think there's some glee because there were a lot of them wearing MAGA hats. So, yeah, and obviously, it came from the March for Life. So, probably on a conservative end. But regardless, it's still not appropriate. And we've seen many instances, of course. And I always talk about, you know, white youth engaged in a racist act, because when it comes to racism, you often hear the mantra, well, when the boomers die or when the older people die, then it's going to, you know, go away or be greatly minimized. And this, along with the mirror, I can do every week, I can do an example of young whites across the country, liberal, conservative, whatever, doing the exact same thing. But the mantle is firmly in hand for the young whites taking over. And I don't know why we think it would be any different. And again, that was a great example of that. So I could not believe when I saw then. A lot of people were rightfully outraged. So Nathan Phillips, good on you for standing right. He said he was a bit, you know, he said it got a little bit strange and a little bit threatening early on. Right. But yeah.
And you can tell.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, Kai, I sensed it. I felt, you know, in his voice as he was chanting. I, you know, that's me, you know, be feeling like I'm spiritual, you know, and having that connection. But I felt a little bit of shakiness there. Mm-hmm. So I can understand that comment. I didn't know he actually commented that he did have mm-hmm. some tension and a little bit of fear, because I sensed it, you know. And as we were speaking about this pre-show, go back to that. This is to the radio listeners, my folks out there on Facebook Live. Go back to that video that's being showed about this situation happening. And I want you to look for a little brown boy that is part of this school, this Catholic school. And when I saw that, like I told Kaya, I had to do a double take and go closer to my phone. And I said, he has about the same complexion as this man that's chanting. And you see this boy on the side of the others that's, as far as also contributing to the taunting, he's doing a dance, he's milli rocking, he's doing that shoop, what is that called? Shoop, shoop? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, all of this going on. And my thought is, where's his parents? What have you taught him? why is it so important for him to assimilate with these group of kids to this degree that he's disrespecting him? Sorry, that he's disrespecting himself
and his family.
And, you know, like I said, I don't know. And I looked at the comments because sometimes you can go into these Facebook comments and so forth and you can see other remarks made. But I'm wondering if anyone else noticed that.
Yeah.
Just strange.
I mean, it's completely, again, completely inappropriate. And sometimes you'll see these videos, like, you know, I'm sure you've seen them with people, you know, black people advocating for the Confederate flag. Or I saw this one guy with a MAGA hat on, this brother, talking about the South Africans, which we're going to be getting into that deep next week. But, you know, the South African genocide and of the whites, you know, which is complete nonsense. And why aren't blacks concerned with that? And you look at people like that, you know, black people who are so desperate for white validation and approval. And, you know, it's so sad. Now, these are young folks, so hopefully they'll have time to become educated. But you see also adults, you know, doing the same thing. So hopefully someone will tug this young man's ear. But, you know, I'm not optimistic, given I'm sure his parents knew he was there. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, at the march, which is fine. OK. But for him to be conducting himself, for all of them to be conducting themselves that way, but especially as a black young person,
right,
to be helping in this clearly racist, inappropriate action by these white Catholic school, Covington Catholic School, I believe is the name of it.
Right. And also to note, you can hear these students chanting, and that was in regards to the young man that decided to stand very close to Mr. Nathan.
Yeah, Nathan Phillips.
Yeah. And they were chanting, "He won't move."
You know, this is he's at his march. You came from your march. You know, but again, there's that same entitlement, that white entitlement. He won't move. Why should he?
Mm-hmm.
Why should he? And there are, again, a myriad of examples that we've spoken about with regard to that. And we're going to get into some more today. But, you know, absolutely inappropriate. Hey, this is WMNF 88.5. For those of you who may have just tuned in, you're listening to Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate on the Sunday Forum. And we are going over our current events. But today, our theme is going to be Martin Luther King unwhitewashed. Okay? Martin Luther King unwhitewashed. And we're going to go over some clips and some quotes from Martin Luther King and just some discussion about the hypocrisy surrounding the modern day adulation of this man when it comes to issues such as how the holiday got started, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to take a comprehensive look at Martin Luther King Jr. today. I'm also going to play one of the cuts is a tribute to him, you know, because a lot of people have been inspired. I didn't know that Stevie Wonder's Happy Birthday came about because of his advocacy for making Martin Luther King Jr. Day a holiday.
Great.
Yeah, and I want to say it was because Arizona, which is one of the states I'll get into, that didn't initially make it a state holiday, but that's how Happy Birthday came into being by Stevie
Wonder. That's the version my family sang.
That's the version. Listen, what I was at an office, you know, this was, of course, in the Army, an office event, and we did, like, birthdays, okay? Every month we would do birthdays, and it would always be the same thing. And then one time there was a sister, and this NCO, who's really, really great, Sergeant Zayas. It was her birthday, and immediately I started singing Stevie's version. I didn't even start singing the other one. And she and I were the only ones singing it. And it was like, okay, there's a little connection,
right,
there, a little connection there.
Right.
She immediately got on board, and then afterwards, I think they said the other one. So, yeah. So thank you, Stevie, for that. But again, 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. If you want to comment on anything we've spoken about so far, and of course, as we get further into the show. So the last current event that I want to speak about, we touched briefly on the government shutdown, the CODEL, and then the Nathan Phillips incident at the Indigenous People's March with the Covington, Catholic High School young people being disrespectful. Jason Van Dyke's sentencing. So, you know, we talked about a month or two ago, that Jason Van Dyke had been convicted of Laquan McDonald's shooting, right? Killing, murder. And which is, this is a big case up in Chicago. And this young man, this 17-year-old, was shot 16 times. So they had 16 counts. So, you know, I thought they were going to do something. Okay. I thought the sentence was going to be about something, or I was hopeful, but cautiously so. And I'll get into that later. But the sentencing took place, and there were a lot of interesting developments there with regard to the sentencing of Jason Van Dyke, white man, who killed, unnecessarily murdered, Laquan McDonald. First of all, his sentence, which was garbage. Mm-hmm. Okay? 6 years and 9 months. Not even 7 years. I mean, there are people in jail for killing animals, etc., far longer time than that. 6 years, nothing sentence. Okay? But this is also an example. It's another cautionary tale for black people. You know, again, there was the sort of jubilation because, oh, you know, he got indicted. Oh, we got a conviction. But I always talk about the fact until there is, you know, someone going to jail, okay, then, you know, there is no need to celebrate. But actually, I'm going to have to amend that. We need to see what the sentence is going to be. It's not even just about going to jail or getting a conviction. Because as we see here, 6 years for killing a 17-year-old, someone who had his whole life ahead of him, who's walking away from the police 16 times. Jason Van Dyke, who had used racial slurs before, and that was testimony put on by the prosecution. But a couple of quotes. First, McDonald's great uncle said this. He said the sentence reduced McDonald's life to that of a second-class citizen, and suggest to us that there are no laws on the books for a black man that a white man is bound to honor. So, of course, those of you who are familiar with the Dred Scott decision and the infamous quote about, you know, white men, black men not having any rights that white men are bound to respect, right? So I'm sure that's where he got that from or gleaned that from. So definitely right there. And in reporting on this incident, apparently in Chicago, judges typically rebuke defendants during sentencings, even for a much lesser crime, and they often explain, why they imposed the sentence that they did. But the judge, a white man, Vincent Gaughan, didn't either in his brief comments. Okay? And that's where that connection is. You remember when we talked about Sheriff Gualtieri? And when he did that press conference about Michael Draca, I talked about the fact that there seemed to be a connection mm-hmm. between these white men.
Okay? An unspoken yes. connection.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that could be me. That could be my son. That could be my brother. That could be my uncle. And I think that plays into a lot of different things, not just with the sentencing. But again, Gualtieri, we saw that in his analysis. For example, that juror in the George Zimmerman case saw that there. Yes, he's Hispanic, but he was white. And so I think you see that again here. You're doing things that are not typically done, and you give this man this nothing sentence. And here is also a quote from the lead defense attorney, Dan Herbert. He said that Van Dyke, quote, truly felt great after learning his sentence. He was happy about the prospect of life ahead of him and someday being reunited with his wife and two daughters. I mean, are you kidding? Of course he felt great about this. You kill somebody, you shoot him 16 times, a 17-year-old, and you get 6 years? He truly felt great. I bet he felt great. And his wife, Tiffany, had the nerve to say, in pleading, you know, mm-hmm. before the sentencing was done, his life is over. Please, please. He has paid the ultimate price already. I beg for the least amount of time because he'd lost his job as a police officer. So you have somebody who's dead, and she's talking about he's paid such a great price, her husband. Absolutely, completely ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. And this case is also credited indirectly with facilitating, if you will, Rahm Emanuel's decision not to run for mayor, because there was a lot of fallout when the video was released showing that he's walking away from them. There's no need for you to have shot. And then if you remember, he shot very quickly, he being Van Dyke, after he arrived. So, you know, yes, he's going to jail, but for not nearly as long as he should.
Definitely.
I mean, it's completely unbelievable. And when I saw the quote about, oh, yeah, he feels great about it, again, why wouldn't he? You know, why wouldn't he? So, again, you are listening to WMNF 88.5 with Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate on the Sunday Forum. And our theme today is Martin Luther King Unwhitewashed. And we are going to be going through his legacy and discussing some things that you may not have heard. And we just had an announcement come in from Cato. From Cato, so let me just go ahead and put this. I usually try to do the announcements right at the top, so let me just go ahead and get this in. So the HCB NAACP MLK celebration, day Sunday, today at 6 p.m., New Salem Primitive Baptist Church, 1605 North Nebraska Avenue, Tampa, Florida, 33602. That, again, is on today at 6 p.m., New Salem Primitive Baptist Church, 1605 North Nebraska Avenue, Tampa, Florida, 33602. So we are going to hit a break now. It's about a break time. We're hitting it on time, actually, for the first time in forever. Hit our break on time. And when we come back, we are going to start our discussion about Martin Luther King. And I will tell you, I've always been fed up with the ways in which he's been recharacterized for a political purpose, right? Sanitized for a political purpose. But here on the Sunday Forum, we aren't going to let you forget, okay? We aren't going to let you forget about how it is that he was treated when he was alive. Okay? And I know, you know, history, you know, things change, but this was not just a regular occurrence here when it comes to this effort to remake his image. Because if you listen to the ways in which his image has been remade, it's been to serve whites. And it's been to serve their efforts to control how we conduct ourselves as a people. And we'll get into
pacify people.
Yes. Like, hey, what would he think about what you're doing? And we're going to talk about that, you know, because listen, you know, I like the man. I wouldn't have been in his camp back in the day, but you know, he's not my daddy and he's not our daddy, you know, and speaking about him like that is insulting. But we're going to get into more of that later. Again, WMNF 88.5, give us a call at 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. And as always, we're going to go into the break with a cut. On the next break, I'll play the Martin Luther King song. But this is Sweet on You, another great neo-soul cut from another underground neo-soul artist named Hill St. Soul, or Street Soul, I'm not sure which one it is, but I love her music, and this is called Sweet on You.
have closets or shelves filled with record albums that you've not listened to for years? Just take those old records off the shelf. We can find new homes for your old LPs. Donate them to WMNF for our annual record and CD sale coming in April. Bring your albums to the station, and for big collections in good condition, we will come for pickup. Call 813-238-8001 for more information.
The Sunday Forum with Kaya Wright and the Fourth Estate is a dynamic radio show designed to bring unique, intelligent, and unapologetic perspectives on race, culture, and politics to radio. With renowned guests, heated exchanges.
Let me tell you, I am just furious about the conversation you are having. This is not a black and white issue.
Well, your point is one that we hear racist whites make all the time.
And topics designed to empower the community. This show is not to be missed. Tune in Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WMNF 88.5.
It will be a big night of rootsy alt-country sounds on January 26th at Skipper's Smokehouse. WMNF presents the second alt-country hoedown with four quality headline bands. Reckless Kelly.
How can you love him if you don't even like him?
Nikki Lane.
Oh.
Dale Watson.
Hey, driver. Hey, he's bound. There's a DOT. He's got his hammer down. He's advertising.
Jason D. Williams.
Oh, Lord, but I'm way too wild. I'm wild. Wild as could be. I'm wild. W-I-L-D. I'm wild. Woo, yeah. I'm gonna be wild.
The Oak Hill Drifters kick off the wild evening of music at 6 p.m. Saturday, January 26th at Skipper's. Get your tickets now.
Hey,
for more information, go to WMNF.org events.
Welcome back. Selling an unwanted vehicle can be a hassle, but donating it to WMNF is easy. Simply provide a clean title and we'll take care of the pickup and donation receipt. To get started, call 1-888-966-3885 or go to WMNF.org. Now back to the Sunday Forum. And Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate.
Like, who is that standing right there?
Who that hoppo?
Who that? Who this? Who this? Who this woman? Okay. So. All right. Welcome back. We are, of course, the Sunday Forum in the Fourth Estate. This is Kaya Wright. And we are going to be talking today about Martin Luther King. And our theme is Martin Luther King unwhitewashed. Okay? Martin Luther King unwhitewashed. And as I said to our folks on Facebook, if you have any anecdotes yourself or any facts that a lot of people don't know about Martin Luther King, feel free to give us a call at 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663, if you either want to comment on anything we've talked about before or what we're about to talk about now. So when it comes to Martin Luther King, actually, before we do that, I want to give a shout out. We got a tip donation here from John Palkovich. I'm probably messing up your name. I'm sorry about that. But a donation of $157. Thank you very much. You know, appreciate
that.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. WMNF Tampa. That's right. WMNF Tampa. All right. So Martin Luther King. So you hear all of the accolades, right? And all, you know, all these think pieces and commentaries and all this about Martin Luther King. And we've all heard, and this is the most bizarre thing, right? We've all been in conversations with white people when, or at least in our time, in our lifetimes, probably have heard someone say to us individually or to others, you know, well, but what would Martin Luther King think? Mm-hmm. You know, or he wouldn't do this, or, you know, this is not consistent with what Martin Luther King, like, you know, whatever. You'd be on Facebook or on Twitter, where I would be, and you see these random comments, and you're like, what are you talking about? You know, in order for that statement to even make any sense, you have to presume a lot of things. Okay, and as I alluded to earlier, first, this notion that somehow this man is our collective father. Okay, yes, he was a great leader. Yes, he did a lot of great things. Again, I didn't agree necessarily with a lot of his approach, but still did great things and had a great heart and wanted the best for our people. But for you to invoke him as if that is supposed to have any kind of influence on me personally,
is absurd and makes no sense. Now, do you do that for any other group? And no, we don't do that to you. We don't say, what would George Washington do? Oh, okay, wait a minute, except, okay, he owned slaves, so, What would Thomas Jefferson do? Oh, okay, no, but wait a minute, he also owned slaves and raped a 14-year-old, okay? So, you know, when we go down the list of your, quote, founding fathers or the founding fathers of this country, you know, racist, slave owners, etc. So let's go to some folks who are kind of closer, right? So we don't say, well, what would JFK do, okay? Or what would John Brown do? Right? Who, of course, a lot of people in Kansas, Missouri, not very fond of John Brown, given that he helped lead a slave rebellion. But, you know, those are some white individuals who did some great things. You know, what would Susan B. Anthony think? Another racist, but still, yeah, did a lot for white women's suffrage, okay? And I've heard people talk about, well, she was for suffrage for everybody. No, she wasn't. Remember, she put the black women at the back of the suffrage parade. Okay, so was not interested in all women. Of course, we know in 1920, black women still couldn't vote, right? So, I mean, so miss me with that. But, you know, it's very insulting, this notion of invoking him, you know, directly to us, as if that is somehow going to influence my opinion. It's always when we're talking about racism or something like that. And then here you come with that. You know, either come with a counter argument, all right, but don't come with this patronizing nonsense. Okay, and speaking of King and how people invoke him, use him as a weapon, if you will, in this way, let's look at comments, thoughts, polls about Martin Luther King from the 60s. Okay, so a Gallup poll in the 60s found that he had a 72% disapproval rating. 72%. Martin Luther King, the same Martin Luther King Jr., okay?
What year?
I want to say it was 1966 or 1980, because there were a bunch of them done, actually.
Yeah.
So, but you know, 72% disapproval rating obviously went up a little bit later when he started his Vietnam and that sort of discussions, and we'll get into that. Also, Robert Kennedy, right? And JF Kennedy, speaking of JFK, right, and people always hail him, whatever, we know that he was having him surveilled, and that surveillance increased when the march was going to happen, right? Much more intrusive surveillance into his living quarters, offices, phones, hotel rooms, as well as those of his associates, okay?
So tapping, we're talking about tapping.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wiretapping.
And here's what Robert Kennedy had to say. He was telling JFK, this is according to a Time article, Negroes are now just antagonistic and mad, and they're going to be mad at everything. You can't talk to them. My friends all say even the Negro maids and servants are getting antagonistic. I mean, imagine, right? Imagine being upset in the 60s in the United States of America as a black person.
Wait, was that John Kennedy?
Yeah, that was Robert Kennedy talking to John Kennedy.
Yeah,
but you hear the Kennedy family, you know, always, you know, exalted, et cetera, and especially JFK or whatever. But he's spying on MLK. Okay, he and his brother are talking trash about MLK and about his associates and using the power of the government inappropriately to spy on Martin Luther King Jr.
I was listening to this commentary by Julian Bond years ago on the movie Mississippi Burning, and that movie makes the FBI look good, right? Like they're protecting Martin and they're protecting the freedom riders and the people on civil rights. And he was saying, no, it's not wrong, it's not right. You know, the FBI was against us. You know, it was every step of the way was trying to counteract us, was trying to spy on us. Trying to set up conditions so that we would be blacked.
Yeah, COINTELPRO, right? COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence
program.
You know, that was dedicated to subverting any kind of black movement, you know, and subverting the Black Panthers, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And while the KKK runs amok, right, still here, alive and kicking.
Well, they actually work together with. with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a massacre that happened in 1979 of a group demonstrating against the Klan in Greensboro, North Carolina. And five people were killed, several others were wounded, and it showed that the leading Klan car that attacked the demonstrators was led by an FBI so-called informant. It was being led by an informant who was receiving orders on how to proceed.
Wow. Absolutely unbelievable. But you know what? That's a great segue, okay? Alvaro was reading my mind, okay, about the FBI, because William Sullivan, who was the head of the FBI Domestic Intelligence Section Division, this is what he said about Martin Luther King Jr., okay? The same one they want to tell us about now. You're listening to WMNF 88.5 with Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate in the Sunday Forum, and we are discussing Martin Luther King Jr. and the fact that he is unwhitewashed here today. Okay, that's our theme. Martin Luther King Jr., unwhitewashed. Give us a call at 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663. So this is what William Sullivan, head of the FBI Domestic Intelligence Division, had to say about Martin Luther King again. Personally, I believe in light of King's powerful demagogic speech yesterday, he stands heads and shoulders above all other Negro leaders put together when it comes to influencing great masses of Negroes. We must mark him now, if we have not done so before, as the most dangerous Negro of the future in this nation from the standpoint of communism, the Negro, and national security. Martin Luther King is a demagogue. This is according to the FBI. He's a demagogue, okay? He is a threat to national security. Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And to continue on with what people were kind of thinking of him, you know, not just the leadership, I was speaking about the leadership then, but back to people at large, in 1966, a year after Selma and the passage of the Voting Rights Act, only 36% of white people said King was helping the cause. So, I mean, this man has worked tirelessly, right, to advance these laws, which, again, a law is only as good as its enforcement. Mm-hmm. So definitely have problems with how the Voting Rights Act has been gutted, how the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is used all the time, you know, in Title VII, for example, you know, by whites, you know, which is to me just crazy, right? The reason we have this law is because black people are being discriminated against on the basis of their race. Okay, and now they regularly avail themselves of this particular law. But anyway, even after that, this is what you had. And I also didn't know about what precipitated the letter from the Birmingham jail, right? But there was a letter that had been written by 8 white clergy discussing Martin Luther King and the civil rights demonstrations, okay? And this is what they had to say. And you recognize this language when it comes to, like, Black Lives Matter and other folks, when it comes to thinking about agitators or talking about agitators, people who are stirring up the Negroes, if you will, right? Back to what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago with Russia, right? And the Negroes being not of our own volition, because we want justice and equality, right? And for this country to live up to its ideals, but just because, right? Just because they're just easily influenced. So this is what the white clergy had to say. Just as we formerly pointed out that hatred and violence have no sanction in our religious and political traditions, we also point out that such actions as incite to hatred and violence, however technically peaceful, okay, technically peaceful those actions may be, have not contributed to the resolution of our local problems. We do not believe that these days of new hope are days when extreme measures, yes, peacefully demonstrating, extreme measures are justified in Birmingham. We further strongly urge our own Negro community to withdraw support from these demonstrations and to unite locally in working peacefully for a better Birmingham. When rights are consistently denied, a cause should be pressed in the courts and in negotiations among leaders, not in the streets. Get out the streets, okay? We appeal to both our white and Negro citizenry to observe the principles of law and order and common sense. Now, who do they think they are? Right? Who do they think they are to tell the black people of that time what they should do and how they should advocate for their rights? Oh, maybe just like telling us we shouldn't be kneeling for the anthem. And kneeling during the anthem. Oh, there seems to be a consistency in thinking that there is standing and a place to tell black people how we should react to the centuries of terrorism and racism that we have endured at the hands of these very same people who want to tell us how we need to react. There's a consistent theme there of patronizing who we are, of having no respect for our autonomy as a people. And we see this many times in a myriad of ways.
Yeah, and always trying to channel people's energy into a kind of a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
Here locally, it reminds me of something that I see as a parallel. When the Occupy Tampa group was getting together, a lot of them, it was a mixed group, but a lot of them were white kids. The Democratic Party solution was, why don't you go to City Hall? You know, go to City Hall and demand there your rights. You know, instead of demonstrating here, would you be put into a dead end situation where they can call on you if they want to? If not, you waste your time there for hours and hours, and nothing is accomplished. You know,
yeah.
So this is, I think, a parallel where they would lead you into a place where they control totally, and
right.
Which can be. Acted or not acted on, by a group that is out of reach, out of our community.
Right, and holds the power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also this underlying contention, if you think about it, that we can't walk and chew gum at the same time, you know, right? Like, we can't employ various strategies. There are many ways to skin a cat, you know? So some people can be doing this, and some people can be doing that, X, Y. You know, there are many ways to get at one solution. So, you know, very arrogant. And also, again, the same sentiment with MLK, right? And this notion of him as our collective daddy. There was a May 1961 Gallup survey that stated that only 22% of Americans approved of what the Freedom Riders were doing, talking about the movement as a whole, right? It's venerated, the 50-year anniversary was a couple years back, you know, and people were like, oh, you know, wasn't this so great? Well, like Martin Luther King and what he led, you didn't support it. Only 22% of Americans approved of what the Freedom Riders were doing once again, and 57% of Americans said that the sit-ins at lunch counters, freedom buses, and other demonstration by Negroes were hurting the Negroes' chances of being integrated in the South. And just before the March on Washington, Gallup found only 23% of Americans had favorable opinions of the rights demonstration. But it wasn't just about what was going on in the South. Right? Because I've spoken about before, a lot of whites in the country, from other parts of the country, try to denigrate whites in the South, right? And try to paint them as especially racist, yeah. Right? And try to carve themselves out, right? We see this all the time. Mm-hmm. And you also see people doing that with Trump, you know, trying to carve themselves out from Trump, you whites, or people, or whites who support Trump, as if it isn't all the same racism, mm-hmm. whether you're liberal or conservative, mm-hmm. right? So in 1964, a New York Times poll found a majority of New Yorkers, 57%, said the civil rights movement had gone too far. They were actually making the same arguments that were made in the South. While denying any deep-seated prejudice, oh, I'm not racist, there's that again. You got to love the consistency, you know? Denying any deep-seated prejudice, a large number of those questions used the same terms, like I said, in the South, to express their feelings. They spoke of Negroes receiving everything on a silver platter. What? Everything on a silver platter? Not even 100 years out of slavery, Jim Crowed and still lynched, murdered, beaten, received everything on a silver platter, and reversed discrimination against whites. Mm. Reverse discrimination. 1964. You know, completely delusional. These people are delusional. To be making these kind of statements then, and to be making these kinds of statements now. 54% of those surveyed felt the movement was going too fast, like I'm talking very fast. Nearly half said that picketing and demonstrations, again, hurt the cause. And 80%, this is in New York now, 80% oppose school pairings to promote school desegregation in New York City public schools. 80%.
Mm-hmm. In what year?
1960-something.
1964 is when,
okay.
When, so you're already 10 years after Brown versus Board. And so this is what was going on at the time when it comes to Martin Luther King Jr. and how he was spoken about, how the demonstrations and the marches and the kinds of activist efforts that were being made were viewed by whites at the time. So to have them pretend like these facts aren't in existence and that we can be fooled is insulting. And we have to educate our children, because our children, you know, aren't necessarily going to have the access to this information or look for it, and will be influenced adversely by this characterization of Martin Luther King Jr. that we see now, the sanitized. Well, he wouldn't want you to do that, and don't you guys think he's great? You know? Oh, yes, he was great. But, you know, they didn't have any room for him or tolerance for him at the time. You know, that's when it matters. Not when you can, again, recharacterize it as to something you can use, but at the time, okay? Here on WMNF Tampa, you're listening to 88.5 with Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate on the Sunday Forum, and we are discussing Martin Luther King Jr. on Whitewashed. And it looks like we have Doral on the line. So, Doral, I hope I'm saying your name right. You are on the Sunday Forum. How are you doing this morning?
Well, no, you just Daryl.
Daryl, okay, okay, all right. I type. Hey, that's on me. That's on me. How you doing?
All right, but I think it's very good that you pointing this out, since we're coming MLK Day tomorrow, and I know you got a lot of callers, so I'll be short. But yeah, it's true. Not all whites, but a lot of whites, and many whites, because I'm saying it that way because it's power. And when you buck up against power, power is always going to make an excuse. And I don't know if you brought this up, but it was also said, you know, going into the 70s that, you know, we didn't need all of these protests and we didn't need all of this falderal and all this stuff going on. You know, eventually black people would have, you know, been given their rights, meaning, you know, the nation would have evolved into, you know, getting rights, where if you were to listen to my uncles and my aunts, you know, I hope I can say this, you know, there used to be a time if you were traveling down the highway, you couldn't go to a rest stop.
Yep.
You know, unless they had black, you know, whatever. You had to do your stuff on the side of the highway in the woods. And that's as far as I'm going to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
But meaning we would evolve into, we would have given them their rights. No, we're supposed to have that as just being human beings.
Right.
Yeah. What do you mean by evolve? We didn't have to evolve for you to conscript us to go to Vietnam.
Right.
You didn't have to evolve to conscript us to go to Korea. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then going back to World War II, it's like it was segregated for a time, and it hadn't been for Mary McLeod Bethune and people like, they kind of wondered about